everyone, and welcome to another Scotswihee podcast. And today I'm joined once again by Don Taylor, the Artistic Director and CEO of Manipulate Arts, to learn all about this year's Manipulate Festival of Visual Theatre, which runs from the 1st of February to the 11th. Hello, Don.
Hi, nice to be back in the virtual room with you again.
Oh, it is. I can't believe it's been a year. Before we get into the details of this year's festival, can you give listeners an overview of Manipulate and its history?
Sure. So this will be our 17th festival, having started in 2008. We celebrate all work which either is primarily driven forward by image rather than by text, or which breathes life into the inanimate. So we define that as covering puppetry, object theatre, circus, bit of dance, animated film of all forms, but then every year something comes along to push at the definition of what that means. And so we perform across it. We have present work across Edinburgh and online. And yeah, we can't wait to welcome people to this year's event.
And why do you feel it's such an important festival?
Well, I would say it was important, but for me, I think, you know, Edinburgh is the festival city, and audiences are obviously treated to so many things coming from around the world and from homegrown in Scotland. For me, what Manipulate uniquely does, I guess, in a culture that is very text driven, is look at different ways of communicating ideas. So that makes it a very accessible festival for people from with different kind of language backgrounds or the deaf community. But also it just activates a different part of the brain, right? When we're looking at imagery, it's a different way of communicating. And I think that a lot of Edinburgh audiences are looking for maybe something that a little bit different. Plus, of course, we're right in the middle of winter. It's a particularly grim one. And I think people really look forward to us sort of erupting in February as kind of one of the first cultural landmarks as we're kind of going through the winter and starting to enter the new year.
I think that's right. I think as we come out of a new year, people are looking for new things to kind of get involved in, find and manipulate. I think comes at almost the perfect time to do that. And I hadn't thought about that before, but of course, Edinburgh is a city that's well used to, you've got plenty of venues to choose from across the city, definitely, who are used to putting on events.
Definitely, definitely. But it is a quieter time of year. And I don't know about you, but for me, January and February can feel like, you know, longer months despite their similar actual length. And so we really find this kind of euphoria. I think our opening party is a kind of euphoric affair because people are so excited to have something back. So yeah, it feels like a special moment.
And is the opening party, have you got the details for that? Is that on the first evening?
I do. I feel like maybe I can exclusively reveal them. They might be up online now, but it's always one of the last little pieces of the puzzle to fall in place. We've got we have new work in development from Circus Temple and from puppeteer Ella Mackay, working with Circus Temple, different pieces, and from physical theatre performer and clown Nikki Hill. And then we have beats from DJ Arusa Kreshi, along with a whole bunch of other little surprises. And then the launch of our One Bum Cinema Club, which is a cinema for one, which people can experience first in a Scottish premiere at our opening.
And where's that going to be held?
It's at the Fruit Market in their warehouse space.
Fantastic. I was going to ask you about One Bum Cinema and thinking, how does that work exactly? But it is exactly what it says, isn't it? You get a seat to yourself and...
That's it. And it's for anyone of any age. There's a series of 3-minute programmes of animation that are totally accessible, and it's just that little bubble of a film experience all to yourself while still the kind of specialness of a cinema experience. So I think it's quite good fun.
I think that sounds like a lovely idea, almost like a little oasis of, you know, having your own cinema experience without anyone, you know, looking at their phone or anything like that to kind of put you off. And that runs throughout the festival, doesn't it? That's going to be there all the time.
Beyond the festival dates as well, yes. Okay. We've got it in 3 venues, Fruit Market, and then it moves to Traverse, and then it's going to be at Whale Arts out in Western Edinburgh, sort of just after the main festival dates. They're one of our Captivate community partners, so yeah, it's really exciting. And I think also there's something about, I mean, you know, we could get into this is a long discussion, but theatres and cinemas, they're kind of like these really heavily codified cultural buildings, which feels super welcoming to those who already expect to be in those spaces, and maybe less so to some other people. And kind of giving these wee taster experiences totally free that feel hopefully really welcoming to everybody. It's a way to kind of, I guess, introduce people also to the language of animation that might not have experienced it other than through these major sort of commercial studio productions. So hopefully it's a bit of that, of opening up animation to new audiences as well.
I think that's right. I think that, you know, if you've never been used to stepping into a theatre or any kind of slightly grand building, and you're not entirely sure of how it all works, it can be off-putting. It can be an off-putting thing. Whereas I think where a lot of festivals like yourselves work is that you there are spaces that people are perhaps already used to, or that, you know, going into, you know, more public spaces than these more traditional places as well. And that feeds into what you mentioned already, which is accessibility and inclusivity, which seems to be key to the festival as a whole. As you say, when it's not text-based, then you don't maybe have the barrier of language that other festivals may have. Do you think that's improving in the arts as a whole, that idea of accessibility?
I think it is. I still think there aren't enough voices from marginalised communities in decision-making roles in the sector. And so I still think one of the challenges is that the offer is improving in organisations, but maybe not with full collaboration from those who the offer is supposed to be for. And we're not a deaf-led organisation. We have been trying to make strides in that direction to work more collaboratively with deaf artists and curators. But it's a learning journey. Certainly, I think that the gift of having less verbal and some non-verbal work is in being able to break down those barriers, like you say, between different groups of people, between people with different access needs, and also between cultures. So it makes the work really portable and easily transferable between different countries, which means we can kind of open ourselves up to this wider range of ideas as well.
And it's an international festival, so you will have, I mean, I was looking through the programme before we spoke, you know, it that's reflected in the programme, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I would say that the significant financial challenges in the sector at the moment, which are well documented, are starting to chip at our ability to keep bringing work over to the UK. Particularly, costs of freight and transport have gone up to an eye-watering level, but we're continuing to try and find creative solutions, because that feels really integral to what the festival is, especially because it's a relatively small community of makers in Scotland working in this way. They need that access to their kind of international peers. And really, this is work which, with the exception of a couple of the kind of really bigger scale pieces which come to EIF, if it doesn't come to us, Scottish audiences will not see this work at all. So it feels really important to fight for that and champion it.
And do you get people coming from the rest of Scotland? Is it quite national in that sense, in terms of the people performing?
Yeah, we do have that as well. And also in terms of our audiences, it was kind of at its peak in 2021, because we had our digital COVID-y sort of festival, and we had people from 39 countries tuning in, and I can't remember how many countries performing. But it was really broad, you know, and at that point, a lot of people who live in other parts of Scotland, particularly far north, or maybe more isolated communities, or also who themselves, their access needs mean they couldn't travel, were tuning in to see our work for the first time. And it, unfortunately, like with a lot of organisations, like presenting that level of work online hasn't continued. But that's why we've kept the online component for our film programme, so that people can still tune in from every corner of the country.
And am I right in saying that last year was the first post-COVID festival properly? And how did that go?
Yeah, so we did have a lot. So we're totally online in 21. And then 22, we did have some live performance, but Omicron hit right before it. So it was only about 5 shows. It was much smaller. And then a lot of the work was postponed into 23. And 23, yeah, it was the full whack, and bigger than usual because it had some of that postponed work.
Sure,
and it was
sure.
great. It felt like audiences were so ready, artists were ready, we were all ready to be back in rooms together. And there was this real hunger and appetite for that work and that face-to-face kind of interaction. So it was great, and it really gave us the confidence, I guess, to push ourselves this year and take some programmatic risks or expand bits of the programme. So that feels like a really exciting evolution.
And let's break the festival down a little bit. Are there different strands and types of events going on? It's not just simply performance, is it?
That's right. So we actually have our biggest film programme we've ever had this year, which is one of our strands. So Our remit as an organisation, I guess, splits pretty evenly into animated film, puppetry, and visual theatre.
Right.
But visual theatre is sort of is masking a bunch of substrands there, because what do we mean? That just means any visually led performance. So for us, that includes circus and some dance. You know, there's quite a lot there. But those three are still the primary strands of our programme. So we've got screenings on the film side. We've had some funding from Film Hub this year to expand that. And we're also working with two associate programmers, which is super exciting because we're diversifying the voices that are shaping the programme, to look at that film offer. So there's three features and three shorts programmes, and then the one bun that you spoke about in the film side. And then we have 11 live performances alongside then a whole bunch of artist development and kind of more sector focused activities, so skills development workshops and things like that. So there's a lot going on.
And if people want to get involved in workshops, if they're interested in taking part that way, you know, actually taking part rather than just being in an audience, how easy is that to do?
So the workshops are broadly geared at professionals and aspiring right. professionals.
Okay.
So there's absolutely no prerequisite for levels of experience in those. So what we mean by aspiring professionals is quite open, but it's definitely for those who are considering building a career in the arts rather than the kind of general interest.
Yeah.
And those are all bookable. I think one of them is now completely sold out, but there's at least one space left on the other three. So it's definitely worth checking out if people are interested. And all the kind of requirements are there on the website.
It might be a good idea to let people know where they can find all this information. I mean, you mentioned the website, and you're also, you know, on you get social media presence as well. Where's the best place that people can find out about the festival?
So our website has changed since last year because we rebranded our organisation, had a bit of a name shift, and all our websites have been brought together. So everything is at manipulatearts.co.uk. So that's the place to head for all the information. It's got full listings for the festival and a schedule, and also details of how you can book. Because we're working with lots of different venues, ticketing is with the different venues. So it's really right. worth checking that website out to just be sure of exactly what all the arrangements are. And it's like the central hub for everything.
And let's have a look at the programme itself. As you say, it's in venues across Edinburgh. So, you know, it's quite wide in terms of where it's going to be. But what's going to be on? Let's look at the what's going to be on.
Ooh, sorry, I was taking a drink.
Take a drink of water.
Moment. I'm hydrating, ready to take you through. Well, there's all sorts. So where to start? We have, I mean, do you want highlights or do you want the lot?
Well, maybe, I mean, there is so much. Maybe highlights, if you can do that, to pick highlights, then people can go to the website and find out everything.
So we don't ever program with themes in mind. We set out and look at what is exciting, what are artists interested in, what's out there. But then as we program, we tend to find these themes emerging. And what we've really seen this year is there's a real interest in the future, and all that means. What is coming for us around the corner with the climate crisis in a light and not so light way? What is happening with technology for all its good and all its ills? And then I guess what all of that makes us like reflect back on ourselves and the way we relate with one another. So on the kind of in terms of the climate, two shows that are really interesting from Scotland. One is Ragnarok by Tortoise in a Nutshell. It's rather than being directly about the climate, it's really about how we contemplate the ending of something,
yeah.
both in a kind of really general open way and also maybe like looking at our own existence, whether it's as individuals or as a species. How do we act when we think something might be coming to an end, and how do we find solidarity in that? And it's a really beautiful, epic piece. It was actually originally scheduled to be on in 2020, and then it had to be cancelled at the last minute for health reasons. And we are now a pandemic and two babies born to the company, which is lovely, later. And we're now finally able to introduce this work to the audiences. And then we've got a piece also by a Scottish-based company, Megahertz, which is called Ruins. It's maybe more about our emotional relationship with the earth,
right.
and kind of at a kind of granular level, looking at soil, looking at the landscape, looking at creatures and where we fit within the ecosystems. And what's really exciting about that is it's a movement piece inside this giant glass cube. with video projections mapped onto the outside and dancers responding to that. And look at me moving as if I can do it. I can. You need to go and watch them to see it. And then on the kind of, I was speaking about themes of technology. So we have this really incredible piece from Belgium called Simple Machines, which is this sort of in a tongue-in-cheek way. The lead artist is a choreographer and essentially fired his dancers and replaced them with robots because capitalism is the natural progression. And of course, the show is partly a way of showing how you can never do that. There's some human endeavors you can never replace, and looking at the writer's strike and automation and AI, we can't take away this kind of heart of human creativity. But it's also actually a genuine love letter to technology and to robotics and how incredible they are if we can harness them and work together. So I'd recommend that. It's one of the rare shows in the festival which is suitable for families as well as adults. And then there's another fun piece by company Batelite, who are from France, who are doing a piece called L'amour du risque, through which robot vacuum cleaners are tasked with serving an à la carte meal to a man, and it all goes wrong. And it's fun and very silly, but really looking at the ways in which, again, technology doesn't do what we expect it to. And then maybe just a couple more pieces to highlight. So one would be La Conquête, which is again a French piece from an object theatre company called Company A, which is two French women looking at colonialism through the lens of being women of colour in contemporary France. It's a kind of sandbox object theatre piece that is performed on the bodies of the actors, and really beautiful, slick, and dealing with weighty themes, but in a very light-hearted and fun way. And then I gave myself the target of six in my head. Maybe I'll talk also about Pickled Republic, which is another Scottish piece from Roxy Cantier, who's a very skilled physical theatre performer doing a kind of absurdist physical cabaret about pickles,
Is that for
which
children or is that for the whole family? Is it?
I can't remember the age guidance on it specifically. I'll check it while we're talking, but it is an adult show.
Well, I was going to,
Here,
no, the
so.
reason I ask is because I had Roxy on the podcast last year to talk about the show that she was doing.
Yeah.
And I know that it's kind of cabaret, puppetry, and clowning, and all of these things brought in
Yeah.
together. And that was one of the shows I picked to kind of go, oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, she's, and well, I mean, if you really like pickles and you really like comedy, I mean, you'll love it. But there's also a pickle party in the bar afterwards, so you can really, really get into the spirit of Roxy's world.
And Ragnarok was another one I picked out to talk to you about. And with what you're saying about it originally supposed to be on in 2020, I mean, crikey, how the world has changed since then. And I guess that probably changes the way that the piece is viewed, or maybe even the piece is performed as too.
Definitely how it's evolved. It's really interesting, these sort of happy accidents. Well, I would say happy accidents. I mean, it's been quite a journey for them to get here, but sometimes a work can't happen and it's really frustrating for an artist. And then when it finally does appear, they almost always say, but it was so much richer because of that extra time and evolution. And I think that would truly be the case here. It was originally developed with Nordland Visual Theatre in Norway, and has had lots of other cast members and other people contributing to its journey. So I think this is really the culmination of all of that. I think it'd be really, really special.
And are you, I mean, that sounds such a varied program, varied in all sorts of ways. You know, you're talking about colonialism to Hoover, is that what you said? Is that a Hoover serving food? Vacuum cleaner, I think you said. You know, where else would you get that kind of diversity? One of the ones which jumped out at me was, Occam Razor, I think, is the company, and they're doing a new version of Tess of the D'Urbervilles, which I love as a kind of story and as a book. But that's a circus group, isn't it, doing that?
That's right. Yeah. I'll just interject and say I looked it up and Roxy's show is 14 plus, just to, so I've not, I don't want to be turning away any 8-year-olds at the door.
I don't know anyone under 14 who likes pickles, so I think that's absolutely
My 2-year-old.
okay, really.
There you go. But he's weird. He likes
Sophisticated.
all of them. So Tess, yeah, I'm really excited about this show. Occam's Razor have been to Scotland twice before, but it's always been in the festival fringe. And you know, the obviously the fringe is the perfect environment for stuff like that to appear. But I think, you know, circus audiences in Scotland would say that there's not that many opportunities to see circus of scale, and this is one of the leading circus companies in the UK. So we're just really excited to bring it outside of that kind of August moment. And also in a venue like Trav One, you know, it feels like a really exciting kind of platform. They've got this amazing technique of creating Hardy's world of the novel by physically building it with boards and then using those boards again as pieces of apparatus to kind of manipulate each other around with. And they deliver the text, some of the text, I mean, obviously not all the text, but some of the sequences are played out in a purely physical way. And it's this really beautiful, I guess, marriage of a more literary world with something that's really high octane and visual. And I think it's going to be hopefully a real treat for our audiences. And it's really popular so far. So if you do want to get a ticket for that, I would suggest book now.
And I mean, how popular is it? And we've seen get people to book now. Are tickets selling well? Is that this is, you know, gaining popularity year on year?
It is, and you know, there's always variation across performances and venues,
Yeah.
and we have notoriously late bookers in Edinburgh, and that has been even more the case since COVID. But all that said, the early numbers are really positive, and there's already two shows sold out, maybe, and definitely a few more on their way. So I would say book without delay.
And when you're putting the program together, are you now at the stage where you're never surprised by anything which comes across your desk? Or are there things that come across and you go, wow, I wasn't expecting this. I'm not sure how this is going to work. Or just, yeah, what is this?
Oh, that, I mean, that all the time. I think where would the joy in the job be if that weren't the case? And you know, especially with a remit like ours,
Yeah.
where we think every year we've understood it now, this is what we do. I mean, I started off saying we manipulate is visually led and animate, breathing life into the inanimate. Because I see things come along all the time that push that. I mean, the robot Hoovers was definitely one in sitting in a tent at about 10 p.m. in France at a festival last year, and you like, that this is not like anything I've seen, so of course we have to bring it, you know. Well, that, yeah, that happens all the time. But there's another piece in the festival. Well, we have more with robots, but I think we have a piece with a drone in the festival this year, which is a duet between physical performer and drone. And again, I've never seen a drone on stage, so maybe there's a little bit of a sub remit in our programming where we always go, what have we not seen before that we want to bring in? And every year there's something like that.
Because I was going to ask you if increasing technology has changed the festival, but it sounds like it's changed it quite fundamentally in some of the shows themselves. They, you know, they are instead of maybe as some people may expect, going, well, we want to shun this AI or whatever you might want to call it. It's actually embracing it and saying, well, how can we work and incorporate that in our performances?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think within the puppetry and animation sectors, we have this incredible talent and skill for working with things and bringing them to life. And in some respects, you know, it's great to see the old traditions still alive because, for
Yeah.
example, marionette making was added to the Heritage Craft at Risk register this year in the UK, which is really significant because there are skills that are at risk of dying that are so fundamental to our culture. So we do have a marionette show this year, and you know, we don't, it's raw puppetry, I take that back. We do have a traditional puppet piece this year, but then I guess also because these artists are interested in innovation, they're interested in continuing to look at the world in new ways and the stuff of our lives and how to bring it to life and animate it, and so that they can reflect it back to us. Of course they're going to become interested in technologies, and so I think for us, and how that plays out in animation, I guess, is in looking at forms like stop motion and hand-drawn animation and balancing that with some of the more digital 3D forms, visual effects. And for us, I guess it's about presenting as broad a palette as possible so that people can see this heritage of where everything has come from and these incredible, I guess, skills that have been honed over centuries, and then also look at what's around the corner next and how we kind of embrace that and not shy away from it, you know.
Well, it does sound like there is absolutely something for everyone. Dawn, thank you so much, and all the very best with this year's festival.
Oh, thank you so much. And yeah, we'll see you there, I hope.
And all the links and details that Dawn's given out, you'll find over at scotswehay.com. And we will be back soon with someone completely different. Cheers.